It is 1 p.m. We'll call this special meeting of the Board of Regents to order. Chief Staff Gould, would you please take the roll? And so everybody on the phone is there. So everyone knows, if you could mute your video and your audio, and just unmute your audio when it's time to speak. Mr. Gould.
All right, so people who called in through BlueJeans, there is no video, but you need to mute your video so that SCS doesn't see you. We also need people who called in on the phone to mute their phones, please. Okay, I'm going to start the roll call then. Regent Carter. Well, please remember.
Here.
Unmute. Thank you. Then mute. Regent Carvalho.
Here.
Thank you. Regent Del Carlo.
Here.
Thank you. Vice Chair Dubrava.
Here.
Chair Geddes, thank you.
Here.
Thank you. Regent Hayes.
Here.
Regent McAdoo, thank you.
Here.
Thank you. Regent McMichael.
Here.
Regent Moran. Regent Page.
Here.
Thank you. Regent Perkins.
Here.
Thank you. Regent Trachuk. Okay, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Gould. This is an unusual setting, and normally we wouldn't do a pledge, but considering the times we're in, I thought it would be appropriate for us to say the Pledge of Allegiance. Regent Hayes, could you please lead us?
Yes. I've got some helpers with me. Ready? I pledge allegiance to the Republic, which stands under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Family Hayes. Nice civics lesson as our distance learning. At this time, I'd like to ask for a moment of silence for our fallen friend, Regent Sam Lieberman, who left us too soon. Thank you all, and I'll have another comment on Regent Lieberman under my report. We will now go to item number one, public comment. Chief of Staff Gould.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just so that everybody knows, in the agenda for the meeting and on the NC website, we had a form that people could fill out. We also had a voicemail box that people could leave public comment. We did not receive any public comment. All we received was a form from someone, a woman named Catherine Prato, P-R-A-T-O, but there was no comment on the form. But I wanted to read that into the record, but I have nothing else to read into the record at this time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Gould. Just wanted to give everybody an update. As you know, we are in very changing times right now, and we're adapting as quickly as we can with the inability to congregate and moving forward in those places. The primary communication so far has been through Chancellor Riley, as he's been talking to the presidents daily and talking with Vice Chair Dubrava and I on a very frequent basis to keep things updated. If there's any issues or any items you want more communication on, feel free to reach out to myself or the Chancellor, and we'll make sure and get everybody all the information we need as we go through this. This is the first in what will probably be a series of meetings. As you know, we have one posted for Friday at 1 p.m. to deal with some budgetary issues. But we'll be having that meeting Friday at 1. As we've worked through this process of going remote, Mr. Gould has been working with the Attorney General's office and getting guidance on opinion six and how we can perform these meetings and still meet our obligation for public comment and public input. And in this time frame, this was the format that we could legally defend and come up with to allow for that process. We will continue to work on adding in video as we can, and hopefully as we have more of these meetings in the future, we'll be able to get us all on screen so we can see each other and have more collaborative meeting in that format. But this will be it until we can get to that point technologically, and hopefully we'll be at a point in June where we can have a face-to-face meeting. If not, we will definitely have the video figured out by then. I do, as you'll see, and the Chancellor will touch on next, we do have a series of actions that we need to take in response to addressing campus student, faculty, staff needs and addressing the issues going forward. And today we have a series of decisions that I think are relatively easier decisions to make at this point in time, because there are ways to make lives easier for our students and our faculty and staff, and to make sure that nobody's put out too much by the process that we are under at the moment. I will say the decisions starting on Friday start getting more difficult. We have been through a process before, nothing quite like this, but we have been through looking at severe impacts for our budget in the last recession, and we went through it. And I want to commend the Chancellor and the Presidents and their business officers for working hard and diligently with CFO Klinger and Vice Chancellor Abbott and Vice Chancellor McKinnon on how we can respond to these actions. And with that, I'll close the Chair's report and go to item number three, the Chancellor's report. Chancellor Riley.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. As Chair Geddes has mentioned, we are in frequent contact both with the Cabinet, with the Presidents, and with the Chair and the Vice Chair on a host of issues. The Council Presidents, we're meeting once a week. The business officers are meeting once a week. The Cabinet is meeting once a week. But in addition to that, we're in daily contact with each other through email and phone calls on a host of issues. I'll just be very brief and kind of summarize where we're at right now. I have provided much more detail, ever-changing detail, so thanks for the patience, as it seems as soon as we get one memo out, one directive, it actually changes, and we're adding to and changing previous directives. But as all of you know, that on March 18th, we successfully moved to remote instruction. We had originally identified the date of April 3rd for all the institutions to move to that date, but that was actually moved up given directives from the governor. At that time, we had limited in-person instruction that centered around clinical placements and CTE. We quickly after that initiated a hiring freeze at the direction of the governor's office, as well as restricted non-essential travel. The hiring freeze requires an exemption and justification that the president has to sign off. It goes through the CFO, and then I sign off on it too. On our April 2nd, after we received additional directive from the governor and the stay-at-home, we limited the case-by-case ability of presidents to have in-person instruction, and really only limit that to very select areas around healthcare. In addition to that, we, as a council president, in consultation with the chair and the vice chair, made decisions to, for continuity's sakes, and so faculty and students have a sense of at least knowing in the near future how their instruction would occur, is that we extended the remote instruction through the spring semester. And then with consultation of the president, we also extended that for at least the first term of summer school through June 30th. And the reason for that was that this week, many students are actually registering or began the registration process for summer school. And we wanted to ensure that they at least had an understanding what would occur. So that's why we restricted it to June 30. And that's not to say that we wouldn't be opening the campus earlier, but we felt students needed to know as sooner than later. We also took some action on the issue of a tenure clock pause. That is pretty much in the discretion of the president anyway, but we just made a point to say system-wide that this pandemic is reason to add an extra year for those that are working on tenure. Faculty does not have to take that. However, they have that option if they so petition. We also looked at the withdrawal, and then as a consensus of the president's move that from 60% of the instruction time to 70% of the instruction time. And then on our agenda today, we'll be dealing with delinquent accounts as well as the pass-fail grading option. One last thing I'll mention, too, is that there's a lot of discussion on the issue of students who were residents in our dorms. We made a decision as a system to ensure that encouraging if a student had a home to go to, we told them they needed to do so during the pandemic. However, any student that did not have a place to go, we allowed them to remain on campus where they're provided not only their health care needs, but also meals and education instruction. Those numbers are decreasing as individuals are able to go home. But generally, it's a bit less than 10% of the dorm population at UNLV and a bit less than 5% of the dorm population at UNR. The last concluding comment I'll make, because we'll be discussing more on the item around the budget, which much more detail. But, you know, our faculty and our students really stepped it up. You know, I'm not saying that everything was perfect during this move to remote instruction, but I'll tell you, there was a lot more less minimal disruption than any of them anticipated. And I think that goes a long way to the great work of our students and faculty. And with that, Chair Geddes, I'll conclude my report.
Thank you. And I'm going to circle back to item three, my report, in that I forgot to mention about SAM. And I've received some recommendations from several of you as far as a way to properly pay tribute to SAM and what SAM has done for the Nevada System of Higher Education and the students and campuses. And we're working on a few different options that we will bring back to the board at, not at the Friday meeting, but at one of our special meetings or June, depending on how long it takes us to flesh out the details. But I've got several good ideas from several of you, and we're putting them together and figuring out what would be fitting tributes, and we'll bring that back to the board for your consideration. With that, we will move on to item number four, handbook revision, temporary suspension of board policy, delinquent accounts. Chancellor Riley.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. The purpose of this agenda item is to provide support to students facing financial hardships who may have a delinquent student account. This temporary suspension and policy will allow certain students with delinquent accounts to register for the summer and fall terms and to access their transcripts. I want to stress this is a temporary suspension that is intended to address the financial stress that some of our students and families are facing as a result of this pandemic. I'd like to now turn it over to Vice Chancellor Crystal Abba to present this item.
Thank you. For the record, this is Crystal Abba, Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs. Just to make sure, can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Crystal.
Okay, before you have a briefing paper and policy proposal concerning the temporary suspension of the provisions of Title IV, Chapter 17, Section 2. As the Chancellor indicated, the current provisions of that policy essentially provide that a student who has a delinquent account for $100 or more or an overdue loan have a hold placed on their account such that they may not register at another NC institution, at any NC institution, nor may they receive access to their academic records. So, for example, a student who would need a copy of their transcript if applying to graduate school, if their account was delinquent, they would be unable to access that academic record. During these difficult times with students, many of our students facing financial hardship, the recommendation by the Chancellor and the Council of Presidents is to temporarily suspend this provision through September 30th of this year. That would effectively allow students who may have delinquent accounts due to financial hardship to be able to register and access their academic records through the spring and fall terms. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman, but request that the board consider approval of this temporary suspension through September 30th, 2020.
Do I have a motion for approval?
So moved.
So moved.
Predetermined.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to need you to announce, because I'm going to have to get who actually made the motion and seconded it. It's hard this way. So just bear with me.
We have a motion from Regent Page and a second from Regent Hayes.
Thank you.
Are there any questions or comments from the board members? Hearing none, Mr. Dean, please take a roll call vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Gould. Mr. Gould, sorry.
That's okay. I'm hearing someone speaking, so could you please mute? Thank you. Okay, Regent Perkins, you're going to be up first on this roll call.
Perfect. Aye.
Okay. Thank you. Regent Trachuk.
Aye.
Regent Carter.
Aye.
Regent Carvalho.
Aye.
Regent Del Carlo.
Yes.
Vice Chair Dubrava.
Aye.
Chair Geddes.
Aye.
Regent Hayes.
Yes.
Regent McAdoo.
Yes.
Regent McMichael.
Yes.
Regent Moran, are you on?
Yes.
Thank you. Regent Page.
Yes.
Passes unanimously.
Thank you. We will now go to item number 5, Handbook Revision, Nishi Grading Policy. Chancellor Riley.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. This item addresses the need for a technical change in the parenthetical language that concerns the administration of SU grades, satisfactory and unsatisfactory grades. Through guidance issued by my office, all NCHE institutions shall make the SU grading option available to students through the end of the spring 2020 semester and after issuance of final grades for all courses. This handbook revision gives discretion to institutions and faculty in assigning SU grades. And I want to emphasize here is that this is the option of the student to choose whether they want a letter grade or whether they want to opt in for an SU grade. I'd like to now turn this over to Vice Chancellor ABBA to present this item.
Thank you for the record, Crystal ABBA. Thank you for the record, Crystal ABBA, Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs. Before you, you have a briefing paper and permanent handbook revision to the provisions of Title IV, Chapter 16, Section 37. Currently, you'll see on the first page of the policy proposal that there is a parenthetical there that dictates the letter grade that would be necessary for a grade of satisfactory or a grade of unsatisfactory, depending on whether or not a student is a graduate or undergraduate. That particular provision is not consistent with the predominant grading practice whereby a D minus or better may meet a degree requirement. There are also degree requirements where it must be a C or better. In other words, there is variation across degree programs. Therefore, it is the recommendation of the Chancellor and the Council of Presidents that that parenthetical be removed, essentially allowing discretion when applying an S or a U. As the Chancellor indicated, the recommendation of the System Office is that students during this time of the COVID pandemic and as a result of campus closures have an opportunity to petition for an SU grade following the end of the spring term. In doing so, it is required that they be advised of the ramifications of petitioning for an SU grade. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the board may have, but would request approval of this permanent handbook change to Title IV, Chapter 16, Section 37.
Do I have a motion for approval?
So moved.
Mr. Chair, can you wait 1 second, please? There is Regent Perkins has asked a question. I was just texting you. She'd like to hear from the presidents on this.
Yes, and I will say, Regent Perkins, as Chancellor Riley indicated, this has unanimous support from the presidents. So we'll have a couple of them speak up. President Miana?
Yes, we are in full support of this change. The important thing for us is that students would have the option, if they wanted to keep their letter grade, that they could keep it, because it may be important for grad school, for professional school applications, fellowships, other such scholarships. But we felt it was also important to give them the option to pivot to a satisfactory or unsatisfactory as a recognition of the fact that this was a very, very unusual conditions for their courses.
President Hilgerson?
Hi, everyone. TMCC is in full support.
Thank you. President Patterson?
Thank you. So the provision is an important one for students who are experiencing a great deal of stress. The most important thing that we're trying to do is to keep students in school and to have a successful finish to this semester and advancing along in their college education. The key to this, as President Miana mentioned, is that we give proper advising so that students understand the implications that this may have in a variety of contexts if they choose to accept a satisfactory or unsatisfactory, depending on where that line is drawn. We've had a lot of conversations with our Faculty Senate leadership. There'll be some challenges in making sure we understand where that line is set with respect to individual programs, but we think that's something we can accomplish in the best interest of the students. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other presidents have anything to add beyond that?
Mark Johnson would have a comment just to say this is permissive only, as already mentioned, completely at the discretion of the student. After getting counseling from their advisors about the advisability of taking the SU grade, and hopefully I think this is a permanent policy change to get SU and letter grades back on a consistent policy, because currently the policy of the cutoff on the S grade is different from the letter grades. Thank you.
Thank you. Regent Perkins, you had a follow-up question?
Yes, actually, President Johnson answered the question, is this a permanent change, and why is it a permanent change versus a temporary change until this the current situation is over? But President Johnson answered that question for me. So thank you.
I think we ought to get Crystal to, who probably wrote this up, to clarify whether it's permanent or temporary.
For the record, Crystal Abba, Vice Chancellor for Academic Student Affairs, that is correct. This is a permanent revision to the handbook.
Thank you. Regent Carvalho?
Thank you, Chair Geddes. This question, I would imagine, is posed more to the president, but I will pose it to Vice Chancellor Abba first, and if she would like to defer to the president, that's fine also. I want to clarify that the SU grading will only go into effect after an original letter grade is given to the student, and then that student seeks guidance on whether they would like to move to a satisfactory, unsatisfactory grade. Is that correct?
For the record, Crystal Abba, that is correct. That is correct.
Okay, thank you. So the student will have visibility into it, a letter grade, and then they go to an advisor to discuss this, whether it's in their best interest or not then.
That's correct. The guidance that was provided by the system office was that students have the option to petition for an SU after their final grades for the spring semester have been posted.
And that's
Thank
Mark
you.
Johnson again. And this is Mark Johnson again. We have communicated that to all of our students as the policy. Number one, they get a letter grade. Number two, after the letter grades are given, they see a counselor to see if it's in their best interest to take an SU grade. Is there some reasons that it would not be in their best interest? And then the student gets to choose at their sole discretion.
Thank you. I'm seeing no other questions. I have a motion to approve from Regent Perkins and a second from Regent Carvalho. Any other questions or comments on the policy? Hearing none, Mr. Gould, could you please do a roll call vote?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Regent Trachok.
Aye.
Regent Carter.
Aye.
Regent Carvalho.
Aye.
Regent Del Carlo.
Aye.
Vice Chair Dubrava.
Aye.
Chair Geddes.
Aye.
Regent Hayes.
Yes.
Regent McAdoo.
Aye.
Regent McMichael.
Aye.
Regent Moran.
Yes, sir.
Regent Page.
Yes.
Regent Perkins.
Aye.
Passes unanimously.
Thank you. We will now go to item number six, alternative graduation ceremonies. Chancellor Riley.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. This item is to request approval to postpone in-person graduations at all of our NCHE institutions for the spring 2020 semester. The item is to ask, as each of the institutions develop the dates for these alternative graduations, they're submitting them to me. I'll compile exact dates to send out to the board. At this time, many of the institutions are still working on what that date will be for their respective institution. So that item is asked that approval is granted to postpone, and then in consultation with the chair and the vice chair, we develop a specific tiered alternative plan for all the NCHE institutions. I'll just conclude this by saying is that a virtual graduation was soundly rejected by students at each of our institutions. They want the opportunity to have a traditional in-person graduation ceremony, and so each of the institutions are working to identify what the most appropriate date will be. Lastly is that, of course, all degrees will be conferred at the spring semester. We're just talking about the actual ceremony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Regent Page?
Yeah, I have a quick question. Chancellor Riley, you said it was all the institutions did not want to do a virtual. Did they ask all of them? Because I thought the only one that was considerate was UNR.
So once this topic came up there, and I can have the president address that specifically, but all the presidents have indicated they have consulted with their student bodies on the notion of having a virtual versus an in-person. And the report back that we received from the presidents has been that the virtual is not something there was interest in, and that they all wanted an opportunity for the traditional in-person graduation.
Okay, thanks.
President Johnson?
Yes, we, our plan was to do a virtual and then let people come in the following two ceremonies and experience the actual ceremony, but the virtual was soundly rejected. We've had lots of conversations with our students, did away with the virtual altogether, and we're working on scheduling in-person ceremonies separately for the spring 2020 class.
Thank and you. If I may chime in, Marta Miana, I think it's important that we don't just blend this graduating class with a graduating class from the next semester, but that we do something special again in recognition of the hardship that they've undergone, and to have a big celebration when we can do that just for them.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, one follow-up.
Yes. Yes, sir.
In the background material, thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the background material, it quotes a NRS that the board should have power to prescribe the time and standards of graduation. And I would ask us to consider going forward. And I've asked President Johnson numerous times for their December graduation, which is on a Saturday, and the flights are different. You can't get up there in time for the start of graduation to push it back by an hour. And they've never done that. So I would like the board to consider moving the time back for an hour so you don't have to fly up the night before and that you can fly the morning of. And I don't think any students are going to complain. And also for any families that have to travel from Southern Nevada up to Northern Nevada, it would help them as well that they don't have to stay the night before. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Page. And as you pointed out there, there is an NRS provision. In going through the handbook and the procedures and guideline manual, we have never established anything to deal with those issues. So I've asked General Counsel Reynolds to take a look at that and see if we can put something together so we can consider what you just said there, as well as other items that have been brought up by the board through the years. And we'll take a look at that as a new business item. We'll also take that into consideration as they set their schedules for these ceremonies. So I have a motion from Regent McAdoo and a second from Regent Del Carlo.
Yes.
Are there any other questions or comments?
Mr. Chair, if I may. Laura Perkins for the record.
Regent Perkins.
Thank you. To hop on to what Regent Page was saying, can we also schedule them so they're not all on the same day, so if possible? Because it's hard for, like, you know, everybody to make it to them if there's one at UNR in the morning and then another one in the afternoon at CSN, for example. But it's really hard for us to make it to the ones we would like to, you know, for those of us who would like to participate.
It will be taken into consideration, Regent Perkins.
Chair Getty.
Mr. Chairman.
Regent McAdoo. Regent McAdoo.
Oh, yes. I wanted to thank President Miana for her comments. I think that these students duly deserve their own celebration as well. So thank you for that. That's part of the reason I was willing to make the motion. But with that motion, I do want to take into account the comments made about NRS that we're going to look at those things as well. So thank you.
Thank you. And if the regents could make sure and text Dean so I can get everybody in the queue, it would help. Was there somebody else who wanted to make a comment?
Yes. This is Rick Trachuk.
Yes, Regent Trachuk.
I just would like all of us to keep in mind that the graduation ceremonies are for the families and for the students. Not for the regents, and so we have to make sure that we're always focused on what works best for the families and the students.
Thank you. Any other comments? Regent Perkins, do you have another? Okay. Hearing none, Mr. Gold, will you please do a roll call vote on alternative graduation ceremonies with the changes as outlined by Chancellor Riley, and the dates and times will be brought back to the board.
Okay, thank you. Regent Carter.
Yes.
Regent Carvalho.
Aye.
Regent Del Carlo.
Yes.
Vice Chair Dubrava.
Yes.
Chair Geddes.
Aye.
Regent Hayes.
Yeah.
Regent McAdoo.
Yes.
Regent McMichael.
Yes.
Regent Moran.
Yes, sir.
Regent Page.
Yes.
Regent Perkins.
Yes.
Regent Trachuk.
Yes.
Passes unanimously.
Thank you. We will now go to item number 7, amendment to the employment contract. President Marta Miana, UNLV, Chancellor Riley.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. So this item, we're requesting approval to amend President Miana's contract until December 31st, 2020, or until a permanent president at UNLV is hired. There's a twofold reason for this. One is that we have postponed the UNLV finishing up the process for the selection of the president. The candidates will be coming in that first week in September. This will allow us continuity. But as important, given the gravity of the situation with the pandemic, the need to keep continuity, the need to work through a host of issues, including budget items, having Dr. Miana stay with us until that period of time will be of great benefit to not only UNLV, but to the entire system. I will note that, and I meant to put this in my comments, we will have a similar item for President Johnson at the meeting on Friday. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Do I have a motion for approval of amendment to the employment contract? I have a motion for Regent Page. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second from Regent Trachuk.
Yep.
Questions from Regent Perkins?
No questions. I was going to make the motion.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Hearing none, Mr. Gould, please take a roll call vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Regent Carvalho.
Aye.
Regent Del Carlo.
Aye.
Vice Chair Dubrava.
Yes.
Chair Geddes.
Aye.
Regent Hayes.
Yes.
Regent McAdoo.
Yes.
Regent McMichael.
Yes.
Regent Moran.
Yes, sir.
Regent Page.
Yes.
Regent Perkins.
Yes.
Regent Trachuk.
Yes.
Regent Carter.
Yes.
Passes unanimously.
Thank you. We will now go to item number 8, amendment to employment contract, Chancellor Tom Riley. In consultation with Vice Chair Dubrava, we are recommending the extension of the contract for Chancellor Riley through December 31st, 2020, or until such time that a chancellor is hired to replace him. At that time, he would move into the role of senior advisor to the chancellor and the Board of Regents. All other would remain the same. And the reason we looked at it in this format is Chancellor Riley is on loan from us from Arizona State University, and he was set to go back to his academic position in August in order to maintain continuity in the president's searches, as well as dealing with the budget and other legislative issues. We thought it would be best to allow him to go back to ASU after the semester, but also allow him to serve in that time for continuity and to be an advisor to the chancellor and the board as we bring the new chancellor on board. So with that, I would request approval of the amendment of employment contract for Chancellor Riley. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
So moved. Seconds
for the record.
A motion from Regent Perkins, second from Regent McMichael. Any questions or comments on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by, or, I'm sorry.
yeah, I need a roll call, Mr. Chair.
Please take the roll.
Thank you. Thank you. Regent Del Carlo.
Aye.
Vice Chair Dubrava.
Aye.
Chair Geddes.
Aye.
Regent Hayes.
Yes.
Regent McAdoo.
Yes.
Regent McMichael.
Yes.
Regent Moran.
Yes, sir.
Regent Page.
Yes.
Regent Perkins.
Aye.
Regent Trachuk.
Yes.
Regent Carter.
Yes.
Regent Carvalho.
Aye.
Passes unanimously.
Thank you. We will now go to item number 9, emergency resolution to implement the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. Chief General Counsel Reynolds.
This is Chief Counsel Joe Reynolds. And this item is in response to the Families First Coronavirus Response Act that was enacted into law and signed by the President in March and actually became effective last week on April 1st. The new federal legislation will remain effective until December 31st of this year. It extends certain provisions and rights under the Family Medical Leave Act. And currently our Human Resource Advisory Council and all the human resource departments throughout INCHI are working on trying to understand the implications of this, as well as working with state agencies on the ramifications of this. And so this resolution authorizes INCHI and the chancellor, in consultation with the chair and the vice chair, upon my legal recommendation and our human resource director's a recommendation, to depart where necessary from current provisions in the code and the handbook and the procedures and guidelines manual to make sure these new federal provisions are being implemented timely for all our faculty who are entitled to them. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Do I have a motion for approval?
So moved.
Second.
Regent Page.
Second.
Second from Regent Hayes. I need voice ID on some of these. It would help. Are there any questions or comments from the board? Hearing none, Mr. Gould, will you please take a roll call vote?
Thank you. Just want to confirm, the motion was Regent Page and the second was Regent Hayes, correct?
Correct, sir.
Okay, because they sound very similar. Thank you. Okay, Vice Chair Dubrava.
Yes.
Chair Geddes.
Aye.
Regent Hayes.
Yes.
Regent McAdoo.
Yes.
Regent McMichael.
Yes.
Regent Moran.
Yes, sir.
Regent Page.
Yes.
Regent Perkins.
Yes.
Regent Trachuk.
Yes.
Regent Carter.
Yes.
Regent Carvalho.
Aye.
Regent Del Carlo.
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you. We will now go to item number 10, FY 20 and 21, NISHI operating budget impact due to COVID-19. This comes to us today as an information-only item. We have noticed an agenda item for this Friday at 1 p.m. for a special board meeting to take action on these items. This is coming before you today with a presentation from Chancellor Riley and CFO Klinger to give you an update on where things are in the request from the governor, and to seek the input from the board on what information you would like to see them work on and bring forward to the board for its Friday meeting. So any questions or comments on the material that you get here today, they will use to work with budget officers and the campus presidents to craft a proposal for our consideration on this Friday. So with that, Chancellor Riley.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I had sent to each of the regents the correspondence we received from the governor's finance office in a letter dated April 3rd, 2020. And I wanted to just kind of address where we're at in our thought process as we move forward in responding to that request for those budget reduction proposals that are due on April 13th. In addition to that, CFO Klinger will also talk about the percentages per institution that we were given by the GFO, and also discuss the CARES Act, which will end up directly providing about $60 million of stimulus dollars directly to the institution. There's other components of that. There's an infographic that he did. I thought that was great and very detailed, and he'll discuss that. A couple comments about this letter. So one is there's a very short time period in the turnaround, and that's why Chair Geddes has indicated and called for an emergency meeting on Friday so we could put forth these budget reduction proposals in the increments that the governor's office has requested. We received this Friday. We started working on the weekend in discussing this. We've looked at how the system has handled these reductions during the Great Recession. We also had conversations.
Hold on one second.
If we can hear. We can hear.
Everyone needs to please mute their microphones. Thank you.
Thank you.
CFO Klinger has had conversations, numerous conversations, with the budget director, Susan Brown. I've also been in conversation with the chief of staff, Michelle White. One thing to note is that the level of detail that's being requested is something that we're challenged as far as getting to in that short period of time, because of our bylaws and because of our need to work and share governance. We have.
Sorry,
I still think folks aren't muted.
Everyone, can you
whoever,
mute until the chair calls you? Thank you.
Councilor Riley has the floor.
You.
Please mute.
Thank you. So we have requested that we provide a specific narrative and general narrative on these budget reduction plans, but not specifically by position, which we would, as I mentioned before, have real challenge to accomplish. That has been received pretty well by the governor's office. They're allowing us to have a narrative that needs to be specific enough, but keep in mind that the governor and his staff will be meeting very specifically on all these budget reductions in order to make decisions on what to implement. They have indicated very clearly that they're not doing this across the board. They're asking for these increments from everybody, but they have made it clear that they are going to be very specific about where the reductions will occur. During that April 3rd memo, you'll see that there's actually a request for a 4% budget reduction proposal for FY20. That really translates into a 16% because we're in the last quarter of FY20. And that amount, and Andrew will go over this in more detail, is $27.4 million. In addition to that, for FY21, they've asked for three different scenarios, a 6% followed by a 4% and another 4%. For FY21, that totals about $97.3 million. For a total budget reduction proposal plans, it doesn't mean they're going to implement all this, of about just shy of $125 million. As I mentioned before, is that we asked and they've indicated that they're amenable to us providing general narrative as long as it's specific enough for them to be able to make determinations on these budget cuts. We have looked at everything pretty much on the table. I mean, obviously, we're looking at the stimulus dollars that Andrew will talk about in a bit, which is bringing in about $60 million. Most of the institutions at this time, since we do not know when those dollars are coming in, we'll be looking at applying those towards 2021. Obviously, the issue of what we've already implemented with the hiring freeze and some of the spending reductions, those would be considered vacancies, contracts, reserves, a host of issues. Now, one area that we do not want to go down at this point is the issue of financial exigency. That is something that would be the absolute last resort. It would have draconian issues with our impact on our bond rating as well as our accreditation. That is not something that we are considering now. We will not be considering that on Friday. Having said that, we are considering a host of other issues, including the issue and discussions about the issue of furloughs. We want there's a general consensus is that we do not want to lay people off, that we want to, if necessary, spread the pain on that through the issue perhaps of furloughs. We have the ability to address that for professional staff, not for classified staff. That is something that the legislature and the governor's office would have to do if they so choose. Before I wrap this up, I'd just like to make a comment is that the reason the 14% was the maximum amount in 2021 was for good reason. The governor has the ability to go up to 15% before he would have to convene a special session and involve the legislature. So that 14% really falls within his parameters to ask for cuts from his agencies and ask those cuts for ANC. With that, I think I can stop and turn it over to CFO Klinger, unless there's very specific questions of me at this time.
Regent Hayes, did you have a question for the Chancellor or after CFO Klinger?
Either.
Okay, go ahead, CFO Klinger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chancellor Riley, I think the Chancellor did a good job of giving a high-level overview of where we're at. So this item was really intended to three parts to it, sort of the current situation and what we've done so far as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. And the Chancellor mentioned those in his opening remarks, the hiring freeze and the spending restrictions. The second part of this item is the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, and I'll go through that in a second. And then the last part is the budget reduction scenarios. And as the Chancellor stated, we received those requests from the Governor's Finance Office this last Friday. So I'm going to direct your attention. I'm going to go over the CARES Act, unless there are specific questions on the hiring freeze and the spending restrictions. I'm going to jump right into the CARES Act. And as the Chancellor mentioned, there's an infographic on there. It's posted under the supplemental material. And I just want to walk through that briefly because there are a lot of components to the CARES Act, as they call it, and it's a bit confusing. So I thought a little flow chart would help to explain some of the various components. So Congress appropriated $30.75 billion to what they call the Education Stabilization Fund. And so when you hear about the CARES Act, you hear all these different words, Education Stabilization Fund, Higher Education Relief Fund. And when you look at it, there are subcomponents of the other. So at the top, there's the Education Stabilization Fund. And then the funding from that, there's a few things that come right off the top, and you see those listed in that infographic. But after that, that money essentially flows into three buckets. The first is the Higher Education Emergency Relief Fund, total appropriations of $14 billion. The second is the Elementary and Secondary School Emergency Relief Fund. That's $13.2 billion. And then the last one on that infographic is the Governor's Emergency Education Relief Fund of $3 billion. So I just want to talk briefly about the Governor's Education Relief Fund. So the state of Nevada is estimated to receive $26.5 million of that. That estimate is provided by the Congressional Research Service. And so the way that pot of money works, if you will, that $26.5 million, the governor has discretion over that fund. And he has to make an application to the Department of Education for those funds. And those funds can be allocated to both K-12 as well as higher ed. So it's unknown at this time if NSHE will receive any of those funds, and if we do receive any of those funds, how much we would receive. Going back, the middle column on that, when you look at the Elementary and Secondary School Emergency Relief Fund, for Nevada, that's estimated at $117.2 million. Now, that's funding that's going directly to the K-12 system. And then all the way over on the left is the Higher Education Emergency Relief Fund. And this is where I want to go down a little bit and talk a little bit more of how that money is coming to NSHE. So that money is then divided into three buckets as well. The first portion of that, 90% of it, is allocated to institutions of higher education through a distribution formula that is based on 75% share of full-time equivalent Pell students, and then 25% relative share of full-time equivalent enrollment of students. And both of those groups of students are students who are not exclusively or were not exclusively enrolled in distance education prior to COVID-19. Now, I want to stress here that the numbers that you see in the next box over to the right, the numbers in the American Council of Education estimate for NSHE, those are estimates because we do not supply FTE enrollment numbers for Pell students to IPEDS. So ACE, as they're called, they're using a calculation to estimate what each institution of higher education's Pell numbers are. So again, just want to stress that is an estimate at this time. What you can see though there, based on their estimate, is that NSHE in total will receive $59.2 million. Now the state as a whole, through this funding, receives $75.9 million. Some of that goes to the balance of that, I should say, goes to the non-public entities, your beauty schools and that sort of thing. So there's a list of those institutions where that money flows. But for NSHE, we received the $59.2 million. Now, it's important to note that of that $59.2 million, and it's the last bullet in that box to the left, that no less than 50% of that $59.2 million has to go to financial aid and grants for students. So half of it can go to the institution for their support. And when I talk about the budget reduction scenarios, I'll get into that a little more. But half of it has to go directly to the students for grants. Now, the other two pots of money that are part of the Higher Education Emergency Relief Fund is there's another piece that's 7.5%, and that includes minority-serving institutions. And then there's a 2.5% component, which goes into the Fund for Improvement of Post-Secondary Education. And this is for institutions that receive less than $500,000 under the first bucket of money. So you can see, based on ACE's estimates, Great Basin College would fall into that category. So a portion of that $349 million that's in that last box under the FIPC funding, a portion of that will go to Great Basin College. Now, at this time, I don't know how much of that is going to go to GBC. And all of this right now, the information that we're using is first the bill itself and then these estimates that are coming out from these various institutions. But really, we'll know more once the U.S. Department of Education comes out with their estimates of how the money is going to be allocated and, frankly, their guidance. Because as is usual with federal legislation, there's not a lot of guidance in there on how the funds can and cannot be used. There is some. Now, the other thing that I'll say is There is a requirement under for the governor's emergency education relief fund. So those are the governor's discretionary dollars, if you will. There's a maintenance of effort required under that provision for governors to accept those funds. Now, there is also a waiver provision. But even without a waiver provision, because our state appropriations have grown as much as they have over the last several years, at least the initial estimates from SHEO are that the governor could actually cut 13.8% of the higher ed budget, NCHE's budget, and still be within compliance on that MOU. So whether or not they will file for an MOU is yet to be seen. So with that, Mr. Chairman, perhaps I'll pause and see if there are any questions on the CARES Act.
I am seeing none in the queue at the moment, Andrew, so go ahead and
okay.
Proceed.
So I want to shift gears now, and I want to go to the last item that's on the supplemental material, and it's titled the GFO Reduction Request Scenarios. And this is based on the request that came from the governor's office on Friday. And as the chancellor stated, there's multiple parts to this. And so if you pull up that document, it's a spreadsheet that shows you the allocation of the requested budget reductions by the various institutions. And so on the far left is fiscal year 20. They're asking for a 4% reduction for the current fiscal year. But I just want to reiterate, as the chancellor stated, had we made those cuts effective April 1st, it would be an effective rate of 16%, just because we're only applying it to the last quarter of the fiscal year. So that cut in particular is very difficult to make, just given where we're at in the fiscal year. The next column over is fiscal year 21, and as the chancellor laid out, they're asking for three different scenarios in fiscal year 21. They're asking for a 6% reduction scenario, a 10% reduction scenario, and a 14% reduction scenario. And I just want to make it clear, these are scenarios that the governor's office and the governor's finance office are looking at, and they will be taking our submissions along with all the other state agencies' submissions and going through those. I think the word surgical was used in the governor's memo to all state agencies. They're going to go through and they're going to make decisions on this, which is why they've asked for the different scenarios. So there will be, I suspect, there will be some agencies that are cut more and some that are cut less based on these different scenarios. Now, myself and the business officers have been meeting regularly. This week, in fact, I think we're meeting every day this week. We have a meeting right after the board meeting today to continue to put this request together for the governor's finance office. And I just want to talk quickly about some of the items that we're looking at, and the chancellor mentioned some of these. So the first is obviously the CARES Act funding. So again, half of that $59 million could be applied to offset the state funds that are potentially cut in our budget. Looking at professional staff furloughs, and we've had a pretty lengthy debate among the business officers on if, how, and when that would be applied. Looking at capital improvement projects where there was state general fund appropriated, because when they approve a capital improvement project, they either use state general fund or they issue general obligation bonds. And so we're looking at the ones where they are funded with state general funds to help us offset those reductions. And this is based on a conversation I had with the state budget director, Susan Brown, asked her if, you know, can we look at our capital improvement? Can we look at HEC check? And she indicated that we could. Next item, as I mentioned, HEC check. Vacant positions, looking at where do we have vacant positions and continuing to hold those positions vacant. Obviously, we have the hiring freeze in place now, and continuing to hold those into the future will obviously continue to generate savings. Operating budget reductions, reductions in travel, elimination of equipment and one-time purchases, Looking at opportunities on the non-state fund sides where we can potentially backfill state appropriations. Also looking at, we have the ability, as I think all of you are aware, to use excess registration fees. Well, this may be a case where we want to look at excess registration fees and look at those as a possible reversion to help cover part of the shortfall as well. We have also talked about among the business officers, some of the institutions I know are considering looking at a redistribution of student fees. I think as you are all aware, there's a distribution, a portion that goes into the state operating budget and then capital improvement fees, general improvement fees. And so we could look at a redistribution of those funds. And then finally, the last item on the list is a potential student fee surcharge, which I know for those of you that were around in 2008 on the board will remember that. I know the system at that time implemented a student fee surcharge at that time to cover some of the budget reductions at that time. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stop there and answer any questions.
Thank you. And I just want all the board to know that Andrew and the Chancellor and board leadership are in constant communication with the governor's office, with legislative leadership, and with our federal delegation. Our federal delegation has really asked us for information on where they can help and how they can help. So all of the information that we're gathering and putting forward, we are sharing with them in the hopes that they can help us through this process as well. And with that, Regent Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I think we all recognize that you know, the state is in a very dire situation, and we need to do what we can to chip in. But I want to put this in a little perspective to start with. When we had the Great Recession, we went from $630 million in state appropriations in 1 year to $485 the next for $5 million cut. The worst case scenario, 14% that we got in the backup material was around 125, I believe. So this is very similar to where we were then. However, you factor in inflation, I mean, it might even be more. But we need to do our part. And Chancellor Riley mentioned one of the things I was going to bring up is I was hoping we could get more detail, but I understand that the time, it's not possible. I'm just hoping that the campuses and the system can as much as possible lay out scenarios, particularly for the FY21, as much as they can. And I get there's not much time, but, you know, if we did the 6% cut, here might be the pain that we feel. If we go up to 10, here it might be. If we go all the way to 14, because as they're making what I think CFO Klinger described as surgical, we need to let them know what they're cutting instead of just a number. But, you know, this is what's going to get cut. We've made such great strides since the Great Recession over the last decade. And, you know, I think we're the only state in the country that has 100% of our research universities are R1. You know, can we sustain that with these type of cuts, especially after not getting the additional funding we'd asked for last time? So just to kind of lay out as specifically as we can, hey, look, we're here to help. We're part of the, we're part of the state. We know every industry's hurting and tax dollars are going to be coming in left. But if you cut, here's what the outcome will be, just so they are making as an informed decision as possible.
Thank you. I'm seeing no one else in the queue. Are there other questions or comments for the Chancellor or CFO? And again, they will be bringing this to us for action on Friday with more detail than what you're seeing here. And I think to your point, Regent Hayes, they are crafting how we would get to the 6% and then 10% and 14 and what that could mean programmatically. So we are leaving a lot of the flexibility up to the campuses to see how they can do that to bring us a solid plan for our consideration. Any other questions out there? And again, if they come to you after this meeting, feel free to send them in to myself or the Chancellor or the CFO, and we will make sure and get your questions answered for the meeting on Friday. Regent Del Carlo?
Thank you, Chair Gaze. I just want to echo what Regent Hayes just said. I really think it's really, really important to put dialogue behind the numbers. It's really easy to say numbers, and numbers don't mean a lot to a lot of people, but when you start talking about the severity of what the numbers mean, I mean, you really have got to put the dialogue and the impact, and he's right about, especially our R1 institutions. I mean, I don't think Nevada wants to go backwards on that, on all the other things that we're doing with our five strategic goals, and I think the five strategic goals have got to really impact the cuts that we're going to make, because we certainly don't want to do anything less for student success, workforce development, as much as we can. So please put dialogue to the numbers. Thank you.
Thank you. Regent Carvalho?
Thank you, Chair Getty. My questions are for some clarification from CFO Klinger. The first question is, will the CARES Act funding be a one-time fund that is going to be drawn from, or do you know, and maybe that nobody knows this yet, but will it be a renewable fund that can be drawn on for FY20 and then in the future FY21? The other question is just a clarification. Maybe I missed something, but on your the supplemental material for CFO reduction request scenarios, you said for FY20 the 4% reduction is in effect a 16% reduction. Can you clarify that, please?
Sure. This is CFO Klinger, and I'll start with your last question first. So it's calculated as, so if you're looking at the schedule in there that shows that, it's calculated on 4% of the annual appropriation. So it's calculated on the fiscal year 20 total appropriation. And what I'm saying is, because we are three quarters of the way through the year and only have one quarter in order to make $27.4 million in cuts, it is effectively a 16% cut. So it's calculated on 4% of the total appropriation, but because of the short time frame, it's effectively 16%. Your second question on the CARES Act funding, the answer right now is we don't know, because we haven't received any guidance. But I do know from when they did the ARRA funds and they issued those ARRA funds, those funds were allowed to carry forward. You were able to use those over multiple fiscal years. And so I anticipate that we'll be able to use those, the CARES Act funds, over multiple fiscal years. The reason why we're recommending not using those until fiscal 21 is because at this time we simply don't know when they're going to become available, but we do anticipate that they will be available in fiscal year 21. But in the past, those funds have been available for multiple years, and I suspect, but again, we don't have specific guidance, I suspect that it'll be the same this time.
And Regent Carvalho, I will add that it's kind of why we're sharing everything with the federal delegation, is as they're crafting round four of stimulus and possibly round five of stimulus and possibly round six, they've asked us to share what these impacts are. So as they're looking at another round, there's an opportunity for them to create or expand on these funds going forward as well. Regent Perkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to echo what my fellow regent says about student success and putting forth a scenario concerning what the budget cuts actually will look like, as opposed to just having the numbers. And another, I would like, just for clarification, I would like an analysis of how each position fits within the chain of command, and then how that relates back to the five pillars that we have. And lastly, the student-facing services, I would like to see those be the last, absolutely last, to be touched, and the thought process that goes with those cuts that are in the student-facing places.
And Regent Perkins, I would just echo on your last comment briefly that when we did these cuts in the recession, we made sure to emphasize the classroom was the last place to cut. I think that was the best decision at the time. In hindsight, we did let a lot of student support services go by the wayside that really impacted student access and student success. So I concur that those do have to go hand in hand as we address these issues. I would ask you to clarify your second comment, though, as far as I didn't understand the question on chain of command.
Oh, well, because we have like a chain of command of that, who reports to whom and how they fit into the structure of each institution. I guess I would like to see that go along with the cuts. Like, if you're not replacing a position, what did that position do? Who did they report to? And how will those be distributed among the positions that are remaining? And something, I guess, along those lines. And if there are positions that are in the chain of command, are they still necessary? Are they still serving students? Can those duties be redistributed so that we can make all the possible cuts, I guess, the furthest away from the student?
Mr. Chairman, can I make a comment?
Okay, so thank you. I think I understand that now. I don't think you'll have that detail by Friday. These are scenarios that we'll be presenting to the governor's office, and the campuses will keep working on that deeper layer of detail. So I think for next Friday, that wouldn't be possible, but we will be getting that information as time goes on. We'll go to CFO Klingner and then President Miana.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and to Regent Perkins, and I was just going to say what you just said. I don't think by Friday we will have the ability to put together that level of detail, because at this point what we've been discussing with the business officers is looking at it from a sort of a macro view, just given the time frame, and we were literally given 10 days from the day we received the letter from the governor's finance office to put these together. So what you're likely to see on Friday is, you know, these are the number of positions we would have to reduce, but at that point in time we will not have the detail of where those positions are at to be reduced.
Okay, thank you very much. Understood.
Thank you. President Miana.
Yes, I just wanted to stress that when we pass this preliminary explanation of the cuts that we have to submit to the governor on Monday the 13th, and we start going into more detail, that it's this is a collaborative process at institutions, and we adhere to the principle of shared governance, and we'll be making these decisions in collaboration with our faculty partners.
Thank you. Chancellor Riley, anything else to add?
Chair Geddes, no, I think that guidance is very helpful. CFO Klingner had mentioned that he's on ongoing meetings with business officers. We're going to be meeting at 8:30 with all the presidents and the Council of Presidents tomorrow. We'll be continuing working on the detail for this proposal for Friday.
And again, if items or issues or clarification or more data that you need between now and then, get that into myself or the Chancellor or CFO Klingner, and we will do the best to get that information to you. Most likely you will be getting these scenarios early Friday morning, as they will be working between now and then to put them together. Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair Gaze. At our last regular board meeting, we had the report of the committee that Regent Carvalho chaired on the performance pay, and we agreed to a 1% by institution. I'm assuming with what's going on, that's just going to be, I mean, it's impossible, and we're not even going to consider that at this point. Is that correct?
Councilor Riley?
Chancellor Riley, for the record. Yeah, we know we're still trying to work through all the implications. You know, we also have other initiatives that we began, and you know, how we present our next budget is still in question. That we're going to be receiving guidance from the governor's office on. So, yeah, all that's kind of up in the air at this point.
Including like the 350-to-1 advising?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
And Regent Del Carlo, I will add in, as President Mian had stated there, it is shared governance. The chancellor has scheduled a meeting Thursday with all the faculty senate chairs. And we are reaching out to the student elected officers as well, and we're trying to get as much information in there as we can to address all of the issues and what the impact will be. And one of the things that is still kind of the unknown is we are putting together all these scenarios. We know there will be a very significant financial impact, but we really won't have numbers until May, and then, you know, the budget, the governor puts his budget together based on the December 1 economic forum, and the legislature approves budget based on the May 1st economic forum. So we will be working between now and next May on what the actual impact is and how we address it. I do have looks like Faculty Senate Chair Frost.
Yeah, thanks, Jason. Brian Frost, Chair of the Faculty Senate, University of Nevada, Reno. I think you've answered what I was going to say is I think it's probably too early I think faculty certainly don't expect to get a 1% raise going forward, right? We understand. We understand what's happening here. I would still advocate that we change the language we need to change, get things ready, put off when we might start that instead of FY21, postpone when the merit thing may start. But I wouldn't want to scrap all that work in the face of budget cuts. I also wanted to bring up, there was some discussion earlier about furloughs. And having been through this last time we did this, one of the issues with furloughs was faculty took them at different times, essentially, depending on their status, tenure status or whatever. So we may want to look at temporarily, there may be some places in the code that might need some temporary changes in order to allow those furloughs to happen uniformly if that was going to be the case. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions or comments, we will go to item number 11, new business. Is there any new business come before the board? Hearing none, we will be addressing that commencement as Regent Page brought up earlier. Reminder, special board meeting Friday at 1 p.m. It'll still be in this audio format. Hopefully the meeting after that, we'll be able to get into some sort of video format. SES and our staff are working on that and trying to get us in that situation. Item number 12, public comment, Chief of Staff Gould.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We did get one public comment online. I'm going to read it into the record. It was from Julia Bledsoe. I hope I didn't mispronounce the name. Bledsoe. I'm just going to read it. My name is Julia Bledsoe. I am a 29-year employee with ENCHI and a TMCC alumna. I am the current president of the ENCHI Classified Council. I also serve as president of the TMCC Classified Council. These volunteer roles are added to my TMCC job as program officer in assessment and planning. Thank you, Chair Geddes and other members of the Board of Regents, for recognizing the important role of classified staff in the ENCHI Classified Council. ENCHI Classified Council is honored to have this opportunity to share our unified voice. In this rapidly changing COVID-19 landscape, the budget is at the forefront of everyone's concerns. We want to express our willingness to support the governor's goal of a unified state workforce and support for the overall mission of recovery from this pandemic. ENCHI Classified Council is committed to working positively and constructively with ENCHI administration at our respective institutions to offer solutions and to mitigate the negative impacts of the budget crisis. Last week, we began polling classified employees across ENCHI in anticipation of a budget shortfall. The following are concerns and suggestions that have been shared. System-wide, classified members have voiced an acceptance that temporary furloughs may be necessary. Furloughs are preferred over layoffs. If salary pay cuts are necessary, please apply them fairly and equitably across all positions, not just to classified, as was done initially in 2011 to 2013 fiscal years. Closely examine the necessity for top-level administrative positions across ENCHI institutions. At the institutional level, consider different ways of working. We request consideration of in-depth evaluation of task distribution to precede any cuts to hours. Many classified positions are already performing work out of classification and overloaded to the point of and performing the work of multiple positions. How effective are furloughing when an employee continues to accrue compensatory time? Consider combining jobs with similar functions or those that are in similar departments. Group admins into more functional work groups, possibly serving multiple departments, with each person having a focus primarily or specialization based on certain tasks rather than having to be an expert on all things. Where possible, continue to work from home and combine face-to-face services in a central location. We are all learning to use technology in more efficient ways. Consider half-day or half-week splits. Front half of the day week is dedicated to one department set of tasks, back half to another. There is a strong interest in buyouts for those near retirement. Phase in retirement for classified is not well known and is an underutilized benefit that should be explored as a means of reducing the budget. Once again, thank you for the opportunity to represent the ENCHI Classified Council. Mr. Chair, that is the only public comment that I've received. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, again, we will hear you all Friday at 1 p.m. We will send out the call-in instructions again for that meeting, and we are adjourned. Thank you, everybody. Stay safe. Stay healthy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.